Thank you very much for joining me in this cold, cold room. We'll later be throwing a meet in here. I'll just have a done fine job of introducing me. Usually I spend a little bit of time explaining who I am and what I do. I may do a little bit of this anyway, so there I am, in case you didn't see me. Who here knows what the FF is? Almost everybody? Oh, this deal is going to go so fast. You're going to be really happy. Okay, so the Electronic Frontier Foundation is a digital civil liberties organization. Our mission is to make sure that when you go online, your rights come with you. We do this in the following way. We are a vital made of three parts. The first part is our legal work. Some of our jurisdictions include the NSA, starting in 2006, over the warrantless wiretapping program. The litigation is still ongoing in the same lawsuit. You may also be familiar with our Polish rights project, meaning that some of you here are security researchers. Our lawyers or lawyer or clerks over there are among the people who talk to security researchers who are looking to find ways to do their security research responsibly, to disclose responsibly, to be able to talk about their work, and not get sued. So it seems like a good thing. We also do some really interesting activism. Again, great tip. And so the closing with the FAA is a great big mess. Join forces with Greenpeace to fly an enormous weapon over the Utah data center owned by the NSA in Utah, just to let everybody know where it is. Because if we don't get everything out of the way. We're also going to do some actual work. We do not have lawyers in every single country. In fact, the work that we do in the United States is not what we do in the rest of the world. We do policy work. We work in the bathroom bureaucracy of the United Nations. We do international activism. We partner with organizations on the ground. And I spend a lot of time talking to vulnerable populations, especially activists and journalists, all over the world who are worried about government spying. One of the sort of more interesting aspects of my work is this particular bit of policy. I think there is some really good blocking information. Many of the costs have gone up. Again, very rare. Recently, I think that's an idea. I'm going to kind of talk to you. The voter arrangement is not a so it's not like PPP or ACTA. It's not legally binding. It's a sort of an agreement, a loose agreement between 40-something countries all over the world. And mainly what it specifies is the export of weapons and the stuff that you need in order to make weapons. So, like the parts of cluster bombs or bits of landmines and that sort of thing. In 2013, as a result of some of the security research that I had done in combination with my friends, people may have become very concerned about the use of surveillance malware to spy on journalists and activists and authorities in the region. And they said, well, we see the most of this stuff is being done using software which is being built in specifically in Europe. So, I've got a great idea. We fixed the Asian regulations in Hong Kong and the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and they see that this is where they start to take care of the wrong. So, they decided that they were going to try to fix the Asian regulation. They had software, the export of certain types of surveillance software to the list of things that are going to be regulated in the court. And then it was up to each country to individually find a way to implement this in their law. So 2015 comes around, and the United States Department of Commerce Bureau of Industry and Security publishes its proposed implementation for the Exchange International, and they are terrible. Basically, they are creepy bananas, and they would make it very difficult for you to export the kind of tools that you use in order to do very basic security research. Or indeed, to do security research for somebody in another country at all. We find this extremely weird. And one of the things that also had language talking about how they want to limit the export control of software used to produce zero day on the loop to limit the window exactly how many persons that because really that could be anything. I'm really not sure what it is that they were planning to regulate that. So yeah, that's why I'm fighting this with Facebook. the Russians possibly spying on the DNC and possibly spying on the Hillary Clinton campaign. There's been a lot of very interesting malware that has been found in Sweden and Russia and China. It has been implied in the fire. Why do I not own this stuff? I'm very sophisticated. Why do I say the stories of these people? Maybe the answer is I'm very sure you adjust it based on the glorious picture. It's symmetry. I care a lot about the symmetry. The people that I am most interested in protecting are not fair game. These are people who do not have a surveillance apparatus of their own, who did not consent to have their lives invaded, who often don't even have an IT department or a single security person or really anybody that they know. They are on their own response to defending themselves, and they are often against the power and might of a nation state. And you know what? That's what I believe. So, what did I do? I'm excited about what we sort of jokingly refer to as the super friends. Some fellow security researchers and I got together and in this sort of multidisciplinary way joined forces as people who understand politics, people who have good questions on the ground with journalists and vulnerable populations. People who understand threat intelligence and people who understand how to reverse engineer malware became the super friends. We all argue over which one of us has to be the man, the theory, and whatever that blue haired girl is in the corner. So this all really started, I'm going to go back all the way to the 2011 exterior. I just gave you a glass of it. All right, so here we go. 2011. Things are, well, I guess better in Syria than they are now, in the sense that it's not like a crater. But what is really beginning is a large civil war. And Syria's president, Bashar al-Assad, has sort of built this reputation as the golden boy of the West and the father of the Syrian king. Among other things, he has banned and blocked the use of Facebook in Syria, and in 2011, he dropped traffic. So Syrians go, why don't we use Facebook? Now, keep in mind, this is before the days of unwound using GPS. So obviously, the people are going to do this, I don't think they're going to be right. The main purpose of this was to man in the middle Facebook traffic and decide what Syrians are doing on Facebook. The attackers are very sophisticated. The project was controlling the user's browsers and sending a security warning. But basically, we have been to the US channels earlier today. Our larger users just could bring a security warning to pick up the things that we saw. Anyway, actually, we don't have to be very sophisticated to be successful. So we have the certificate. It's not actually written in Chrome. And then things get a little bit worse. So, at the end of 2011, a group of activists providing technical support to the uprising were arrested. And one of their members, who stayed in the team, got suspected a couple days later from the attack of one of the captured friends. The message advised him to install a useful tool which would enable him to decide his online identity and maintain surveillance. Completely installed the software. He realized upon reflection that he was stronger than he did, and that the nature of his life continued to be suspicious. He needed to external agencies for aid, people that I knew. Compared to the reporting, revealed that he had been affected with a rat-only system, which has significant capabilities that are different. It allowed for the launch of a few strokes. Streaming was like you would be set off, the ability to watch into a webcam, which is dangerous microphones, and the ability to execute the Detroit. So, in addition to this particular trophy, we've seen the fans have been twice previously compromised, several weeks before, and I was saying, this is actually really not uncommon in my life. We're all fond of the thing we do over and over again and again and again. For a variety. And also for the computer in this hour, it continues to January, and February is 17th years old. All in the sort of limited form. Republican the title of the article was Computer Fire is the newest weapon in Syrian conflict. Sort of a thing that was newest weapon in the Syrian conflict is a certain phrase that I think I'm really, really sick of reading by now. So it's called for the widespread hijacking in Afghanistan. And eventually he was the president of peace. This is the first mainstream news article I've ever read that actually had the IP address of a CNC. This is a group of activists and technologists that track multiple specific campaigns of the CNC of the Islam regime in Syria. I spent about 2.5 years doing that. And we put out, I think, a total of 13 reports. Their preferred methods involved targeting dissidents. Thank you. Mallard is actually still very much part of the area's threat landscape today. It's definitely gotten more sophisticated, it's gotten more complicated. But Syria is really not the only problem that we have. Over the period, there's a lot of work for these factors along with others, but the targeting of different strengths. Involving work was on the use of the mandatory attacking team and the small footprint of a lot of that started in Morocco. Reading video paper, all over online, just to read the physical paper anymore. And I come across an article by a student from Morocco who's considered a compromise of modern. And the activist could not be, now he is not there. And I'm thinking about who do I know in Morocco who's an activist? And I called the one guy that I know, who's just on the left in Morocco. And I said, hey, do you know anything about this kind of modern situation? And he said, oh, I see. So he said, we know it. We did a full analysis. This turned out to be a competing RPF software that has considerable capabilities for to buy it on your computer. It was sold by a company called Action Team based in Milan. And this was really the beginning of a thread in people being fired on threads. Really culminating in an enormous attack, which happened just about this time last year when a hacker broke into the hacking team and approximately half a terabyte of data, including an entire mail to you. Much fun was had that time. So, Morocco is not our only problem. PFF has also been involved in research that led to the experience in the last week. I was contacted by a security researcher who studied an interesting image while looking for all the trends that were used in the image being used as part of a plugin. That image involved a group called Inbox7, which is a visiting group in Ethiopia, which the Ethiopian government had just declared to be terrorists. This was particularly alarming because Ethiopia is part of the control of the U.S. in the global war on terror, and we do in fact spend the money to fund on terror. So I went around looking for somebody from this group who would talk to me, and I said, about them. Once we did find out, I found people who were willing to communicate with us. We discovered that there are several people in the organization have been infected with Kingfisher spyware. I think most of you are familiar with Captain Kingfisher. Kingfisher at the time was a product of a company called Gamma, which was based in Munich and in the UK. It's been spun off into its own thing, which is simply called Kingfisher, meaning it's a product called we sent a researcher to Washington, D.C. to go ahead and take a look at our victim's computer. Through forensic analysis, we were able to establish that inside of the used file on his Google searches and also on his while he was in Washington, D.C. He is, in fact, a gentleman who lives in Silver Spring, Maryland. He did not leave the Washington area the entire time. His computer did not leave the Washington area the entire time. And this means that the threat took place in the United States. And so we decided to go with local. We decided that we would be the government of Ethiopia on behalf of the threat who goes by the name of Mr. Kedan. And our assertion is that if you spy on people in the United States, you need to follow U.S. law. And covertly installing a red hand on the scene that any kind of big threat is a violation of the White House. This has been dismissed, but we are in the process of filing an appeal against the U.S. law on a very important issue. I want to extend beyond Ethiopia. what we're saying to Vietnam. Vietnam is one of those cases where dissidents and journalists are very difficult to cope with. There is a very narrow and closed window in which you can do any kind of real journalism. And so most of the independent journalism and nearly all of the activism that is done in Vietnam has a very strong online component. And so blogging is alive and well. And it also means that the Vietnamese government goes to beat up blogging very often. Here are two of them, Le Quoc Phong and VK. Both of which, I believe, are free now, but both of which are campaigns that worked on myself when they were both facing trial and prison time. As a result of my work on these campaigns, I might help with targeting with malware by the U.S. government. Nothing is easier in the area of malware analysis than when the government sends malware to the EU. In addition to myself, that turned out to be we also targeted a co-worker of mine who had written a single blog post about the end. I had not had time to do it myself. And she had only worked at Yale Academy for about 3 months, which tells you a little something about how sensitive Vietnam is about the system. Of the Trojan group that it has, illegal key logging and by my red phone and taking screenshot capabilities, that it was written almost certainly by Vietnamese, that it did not use any sort of off-the-shelf part. And I also managed to lead the campaign to attack not only on myself and co-worker, but on a mathematician in Australia, and also on a Vietnamese activist located in Los Angeles, who was definitely infected and whose private life was convoluted and found out in other places. My colleague and I are not even the only two people who get targeted. Liz here is my colleague, director of free expression, I think, yes. This is my illustrious director of free expression, Julian New York. Julian is based out of Berlin, and it's actually at AFF for many years. One day, she is sitting in her office, and she receives an email from a gentleman reporting to be a journalist with an attachment that he says is very important to deal with right away. Now, Julian has been sitting next to me for a very long time, so he doesn't look as strange to talk to some, extremely picky journalists, and he says, well, why don't you just copy and paste it and put it in the email or the attacker is profoundly interested in doing this. He's like, no, open the attacker. Open the attacker. The attacker calls her on the phone and says, open the attacker. No, I'm not open the attacker. The attacker then calls her an additional 32 times. Perhaps under the impression that eventually he will pay. And I really never really know. Very sorry. Analysis of the malware that we have come to the Cyber Center revealed by the Indian government, and as part of the campaign that we saw by the many other activists who work in North Africa and the Middle East, and specifically people who work on using the tiny photo of Colin Anderson, who worked on the land great deal, and who just debuted a bunch of work at Backup on state sponsored malware that went wrong, targeting the activists. Yes, that's activists. Are not the only people who get targeted. Not too long ago, earlier this year, we were alerted by a Google security team. Thank you, Google security team. Somebody has taken over www.alcockfrontierfoundation.org and they're using it to distribute malware. Investigation and analysis led us into the illustrious onslaught of there at APT funding, which is most of the news right now, for allegedly being involved in the DNC hack. So, Russia everywhere, Thursday. It brings us to the latest news. This is Operation Manual. For those of you who are not familiar with the manual is an adorable web of native beautiful fantastic stone, much beloved by the community researchers in the world. It also looks really fun. This will become important later. So, to begin with, how many of you here know where Kazakhstan is on the map? How many of you here are living in the city because I'm showing you a map of Kazakhstan? So, there's Kazakhstan, right between Russia and China, near East Kazakhstan, and Kyrgyzstan, and other places you probably were not able to find 5 minutes ago. This gentleman right here is Mirzabai. It's not a gun to use it in school. He is the first current and only president of Kazakhstan, which is also a little bit by a commander's country. He is very friends with this guy, and I'm assuming that he's only just about to take off the president and run right out of the president. In the area of freedom, Kazakhstan is kind of lagging behind. There's a 2015 report sent out by Freedom, which rates Elizabeth. This is the keyboard. It is in Brothers, which is over. It looks like sort of a blurry email. It says this is the Apple invoice, that's PDF, which is okay. Interestingly enough, the left of the bias is the name of a visiting player and theater director who was obviously very well known to the public in San Francisco. So we open up this attachment, the attachment looks blurry, you're like, oh, I can't read this. And then it says, oh, I see, you're going to upgrade your Adobe PDF. And when in fact you do this, you download and start. And there's not enough for you to do. No. The malware that we find is as part of this campaign. And in terms of the first, is extremely common. It is called Vera or Jackson. It is a database commodity wrapped multi platform. It runs on Windows, Mac, Linux. DSP and Solaris, if you're trying to compromise a system from the server from the 90s. Just in case it's existing, it's existing capabilities in it, it has a token architecture and an API. And most importantly, it is cheap. Very important example of what the plugins look like with the server UI. Viewing of your remote screen, and you can also use some Twitter and Facebook on it. This is the control panel looking like. There's some of the features. There's a process list. You can have it in registry. You can have it in terminal call system. Also, in the scribbling, the way you turn your remote webcam, disable the webcam indicator light because no one likes it when you can tell when you're flying on. You can do password recovery, it's got a keylogger, classic. In your reverse stock proxy, a rip shell. And of course, if you really, really want to talk to people that you just infected, you can always open up the chat. It's also got some really interesting time analysis tools. The vendor's updated with the index capacity. It runs a bunch of other things. Then, if it's a file is encrypted, the key is hidden in the zip file metadata, and it's able to detect your show region. So opening it up in the VM, not necessarily letting it work at home. We also found another wrap as part of this campaign. It's called Bandit. Bandit is another off-the-shelf commodity wrap. It's been continuously developed for a number of years. It's a 6-7 wrap. It only targets Windows. We think this is one of the reasons why you actually see both Rasta being used quite regularly, because they start with Bandit, but then they would go, hey, I'm not getting any infections, my target is not using Windows, and then it switch to Java. It's modular. You can start show, you can record sound, you can record video, you can do logger, you can get screenshots. It's featureful. There are fewer artifacts on which you can actually use it when you use these kinds of graphs. The problem with using these sort of off-the-shelf commodity graphs is that they can be detected by users, so they're really not suited for advanced defenses. But really, if you're going after the kind of vulnerable populations that we're talking about, lawyers, these are not the best defenses. These are people who barely even have, like, kind of IT people. Since we couldn't get by looking at the graphs themselves, since they're widely used in we went ahead and took a look at the CRC. We discovered that they were running statistics in virtual domain. These are Windows servers running XMPP. They run crazy servers. They're in the domain. They have a shared testing group. But they are not available. There are many ports open and many open directories. So there's nothing to do. What we found when we went to the open directories were documents including cookies and a commercial label for cigarettes and something about a cigarette company. So what we think that we have here is an indication that these species are being used for multiple campaigns at once. Well, first thing in this idea are a bunch of screens with an eye to log into what we think are different campaigns. So what happened? This is my favorite sort of summary of what we this is a summary put together by Catherine Cox of the Diplomat, having read EFF's project and the work of the National Collection. She says, in all these terms, which leads us to my favorite thing, attribution. Who's behind all this? Join me at the courts, and attribution is very hard. It's unlikely that you're ever going to get, screenshots of some guy looking like Borat sitting behind the computer, twirling his mustache, saying, well, I'm going to be a good one to study with the character. But we have to look at the other factors. We think that there are some we know that we're being sent to the targets have items that were meant to make them appealing to people who are interested in everything. Like information can you see, press button, can you see, has a view of interest behind it. Most of the targets that we were looking at were involved in legal disputes against the government of the country, almost entirely in European, but occasionally in American courts. And finally, the spearfishing was something that was obviously quite interested in that was related to that. Additionally, we have between the government of the country and our own global intelligence. Which is extremely tricky, and it specified that we had started a campaign to get data from at least one different observer to the government. So the token from our campaign officially denied having done any hacking, and that would be against the law in Switzerland. The new emails published by Calderwood, who led to the government process and had previously hired, when our government clients come under threat of gaining global embedded threats and capability to support them with full speed and response actions, including in compliance with applicable laws and regulations, an array of countermeasures as well as both in kind and asymmetric responses. And that sounds like hacking. So, emails published by Calderwood and analyzed by Mediacorp, which I did not read myself because they had already been taken down as a result of the government of Alexander's decision. And then the government of Alexander's decision was Bernard Quarantini, or Quarantini. I can't really call it because, on one hand, it was an economy, and on the other hand, it's not. In fact, he was a very good France's domestic dependence agency, the DCI, from 2007. For the progress of legal proceedings against the United States, and all certain important tools in progress. And for the interestingly enough, the email also revealed that over a period of 2 years, the government of Pakistan paid $3 and $4 million to our community respectively. So this kind of funding did not come cheap. So there's strong evidence regarding our basic calculation and more government taxes. And the government of Pakistan was not cheap. However, there's no investment in the personal and the and we believe the technical evidence whole bunch of different pastors. Some just did. Really? Come on. I'm after. So, we went to the table to get there and look to know if you can structure. And what we found was this compassion called Operation Manifold. From this we were able to observe overlap between operational level and an afternoon and an evening. Aiken is an Indian company that allegedly provides the standard capability on the contract. A 2016 report that is training for Norman Cook had its operation in Hanover and rolling an Indian cyber attack infrastructure because multiple concerns linked to this action. It included attacks on people on the cyber attack, a Norwegian telecom channel, and multiple other companies. Aiken is a nice if they do any hacking for help. But they do have a typical hacker training and number of different companies. According to documents filed by lawyers representing the Ambassador's family in the report, several examples linked to this campaign were various attacks. Interestingly, Emily Haller and Hacker family were also found on an Angolan activist's computer, including all their beliefs. The contract was also related to the community by the family lawyer. We can learn an analysis carried out by different students on examples we have linked to Operation Renewal. Those that were able to trace the email back to the computer that was located in New Delhi, India. So we can talk about it. So we have the domain. It is an especially easy answer, which is something that you would expect to have sometimes. And the research revealed 607 domains related to Ethan, which we were able to identify a historical public data to 1,345 IPs. Of these, there were direct overlaps, 16 direct domain domains. There were indirect overlaps, same as different domains, with 110 of the operation data domains, and all the approved domains associated with operation and home. Without IP domains. So, does that mean they've been responsible? Could it have been someone else in India? Could you be making some sort of terrible mistake? Maybe. I'm not saying it could be aliens, but it could be aliens. And what does it all mean? It's actually kind of hard to tell how all of this stuff means. And the reason is because it doesn't really have a lot of research. On the bottom of the project calendar on the content. When you go to the world, nobody cares about that. Like, most of you will probably know that you can do a lot of the paper. This is work that very few people do because it is not sexy. It is not technically complicated. Just about any of the security researchers in this room. The people who reverse malware for a living, the people who do threat intelligence in this room, would have done work that my colleagues and I just did, but we didn't. And the reason for that is when that kind of stuff comes across your desk, you go, like, it's a pretty fun option. Why do I even know what I've done? So, more research is needed. There's no way that we have right now to definitively see that Arcanum or Aiken or indeed the government of Kazakhstan are related to this campaign. But we think that there are a lot of very interesting new things in terms of I strongly recommend that researchers take a look at our public report at www.eff.org and you perceive some of those new things. You are better at this than we are. So, what can we take away from this talk? One lesson that we have to do is to take a look at work. To be able to the gold standard for those people to click on the religious links, opening the religious documents. Governments are very readily using obey in this kind of situation. Sometimes I want to use it to see the business of the graphs. Governments are not monolithic. We're learning that they can take a look at the survey. For example, in the case of Kazakhstan, this is a state that offers to the hacking team. Having said that, hackers don't need to be sophisticated to be effective. know what you think they're supposed to be. They know that the human rights report that you've done to our work for the Vietnam Tripsy conferences and the really interesting Tripsy conferences. So we want to actually effectively work with like a great security researcher. Earlier this week, the University of Atlanta published their report on what they call Spider or Stormon, which they believe is a state actor which is targeted roughly in the community. It is incredibly sophisticated, it is very complicated, it is super interesting. But there are lots of people doing this work. And there are not a lot of people worried about the Chinese countries with authoritarian regimes that, that I've worried about. So, what have we been doing about all this? A couple of years ago, me and my colleague Morgan Marchibois in both of our campaign, we had Chinese. And Chinese is a real team that security researchers to do this work with. We discovered that there were a lot of researchers who were interested in helping, but the security managers are referring to the TV and here's what. So here's the stuff that we do. We do open community relations and tech building, so running around meeting activists and journalists who are potentially in trouble and getting them to the point where if they're in trouble, they will actually be handing their, precious devices, which it's a long time to work. There's incident response and dollar analysis, forensics, writing time, most security people want to get their time doing. There's a lot of education and training, IT support, and updates. If you can keep both of them completely, if you want to catch them commuted live on site, there's also some policy research and legal and law enforcement work. If you see somebody breaking the law, you turn them in. Also, we do a lot of advocacy and awareness and policy change, such as the work with the Vietnam Nation. And finally, we do follow up with the affected parties. Because when security researchers meet users who are affected, their primary concern is getting their hands on the sample. Just give me the sample. As soon as I get the sample, everything's going to be okay. Give me the sample, give me the sample, give me the sample. What a researcher, an activist, or journalist, or lawyer really wants to know is it okay to use my device? Can I use my phone? Can you fix it? And the problem comes in security researchers are not particularly interested in doing it. So what we discovered was that security researchers are interested in doing the most exciting part of the job, which is a malware analysis. And our analysis is in fact only a very, very small part of what we do. So it was really hard to break down the books that we were doing into just a couple of hours of manual analysis that we could throw to a single user that they can reverse some findings. So what are we going to do about that? I have some ideas. First of all, I think it would be really cool if antivirus companies had a sponsored malware warning in much the same way as Google or Facebook does. I think that these warnings should be useful, which I think is really important. I'm looking at you, Twitter. When Twitter put out its first set of state sponsored malware warnings last year, it appeared to be warnings that were targeting people who are associated with the core project. And for some strange reason, they suggested that the correct course of action if you are being targeted for state sponsored malware is to use Tor. So that's incorrect one to make sense. What I recommend that security researchers do is to pick a cause that they care about. Something that they care about should be all together at the same. And if you have questions about what that cause might be, if you would like some ideas about NGOs that need help, what you should keep in mind is that you may not be greeted as a magical rock star unicorn. You are a magical rock star unicorn. But this might not realize it yet, And so, this is why it is very important for you to be invested in the entire organization itself, so that you can continue to learn to trust one another, and they can learn to accept the extremely important gift that you have to give. Final takeaway: none of the research is sexy. The tools and the after got sophisticated. The tax probably isn't sophisticated for this. It's mostly being done with spirit people opening up the tax. No ideas are required. And finally, it's still worth doing, even if it's not sexy. Because it's not every day that you're literally responsibility of preventing people from getting kidnapped or killed or exposing or leading to the exposure of state crimes. You can make an enormous difference by doing fairly simple technical work, a lot of sort of social and non-technical work. And I think it's absolutely worth it. Thank you very much. Sure, I
have a few other questions. All right, if you have to step up to the microphone.
Yes, hi, my name is Jeff. Thank you for the topic. I just wanted to clean this. One comment for you through two broad words that people being targeted, public supporters, and members of the tax, which will be going back in that kind of thing. I just wondered if the EFF either published advice on how they can do that safely, say with the RFCD or you offer a website that they can open document themselves on that site or have to know every move. I kind of support all those supporting mechanisms. Do you do anything like that?
Indeed, we do. We don't run Google Drive. But what we do is we publish a guide fairly private online called Surveillance Self Defense. And you can get there by going to sv.efs.org. It has several especially useful sections for people who are concerned about malware, including. Section on malware, and also a section on avoiding phishing and spear phishing. Additionally, I do a lot of one-on-one work with people in vulnerable populations, and so frequently I get phone calls in the middle of the night from people who have accidentally clicked on links or who have received strange emails, and it is my job to tell them that everything is going to be okay, or that if it's not going to be okay, then everything's not going to be okay, but we call them to be. So, what kind of
books
that we do?
I was just wondering, if I can play the doubles, I think it's pretty interesting. What is your position, what is your position on, say, the UK government installing malware on known active, I guess, like the terrorists? If we were planning an attack, would that be the question because it was a rule for one, it's a rule for all? Or is there any kind of acceptance by the effect that can't be on some places, maybe if it's actually some of the things, then that is an acceptable point by the government?
I'm not entirely opposed to the entire notion of lawful interception software. Certainly opposed to all mass surveillance, like let's get that for this and with mass surveillance is okay. But if you tell governments that mass surveillance is not okay, then you need to give them some sort of protection for law enforcement. And that other option is targeted surveillance. Targeted surveillance needs to be narrow, it needs to be necessary, it needs to be proportionate. It needs to be within the framework of a rule of law. It needs to be really warned. It needs to have a very high bar. Because RACs are so continuously inclusive and can be full access to these things, they need to be removable. You need to be able to undo the harm that you have done. And they also need to be accountable and accessible so that you cannot interfere with the information that you are getting from your lawful interest contract. So those are sort of the guidelines that EFF is thinking of when we think of what kind of level impact software is okay. I think that just saying it's legal is not enough, because frequently you're with countries where the rule of law is not particularly strong, and the rule by law is rare attack. And so if you kick off the government, everything they're doing is illegal. Make sure you have a warrant. If they don't have a warrant, they'll write one up for you right now. And I think that if our common duty to protect the human rights of people, even in countries where what they are doing is illegal, and specifically we can protect them from state violence, it's extremely important.
Well, thank you for doing that.
Oh, thank you.
So you have a problem, is it safe to live on computer? No, no, it's not. And cleaning a computer is just not a problem. What you need to do is edit. Perhaps the EFF could distribute boot media that builds your computer.
And when you're going to end up with malware that gets written by, I would be extremely wary of EFF offering any kind of security software. We offer privacy software, all of which is open source, easily on the phone, everybody can see exactly what it does. Security software, I think, is more complicated. And I think that there's a lot of
benefit. I'm just going to do that piece of consult Windows and Mac OS and
whatever. Oh, yes, I could never distribute
Windows. You're really not for it.
We do. It is a thing that I think is not a bad idea to do privately and legally. I think that you're going to get sort of a, this is your clean boot of Windows with the EFF view of Google. This is put it in a super tricky, like, political situation.
And it's subject to the attack of some things where you have to be able to figure out what that tells you.
What is the difference? It's very horrifying that my lawyer.
I have a ridiculous question for you.
I know the same questions are only ridiculous.
Actually, they can come in contact with law enforcement on captain directly. And they can have other questions to important areas about immunization. They have some agent who has had to hit the clock recording button and have a contact with a lot of traffic people from communicating. I'm going back to the question to ahead of mine where you mentioned your position about using RAP. For sanctioned wires. I'm wondering if you've ever seen a rat that has a notion of minimization. These things seem to be all the same. They queue up and they don't care who's using it, which promotion. And I'm wondering if any of these law enforcement tools that you've seen or know about or have looked at have any notion of minimization to it?
The law enforcement tools designed to be sort of lawful and effective for sending to Western countries typically have some sort of nod to accountability and testing, but not necessarily minimization. Usually, it's a way of telling whether or not some user is at the computer so that the whoever is running the app has the option to turn it off. And you might have to. You could just record everything forever. Big deal. That's what the software seems to look like right now.
So you have this slide where you're kind of saying that people are going to all the stuff that has to be done, and people want to do the part, but they don't seem to want to do the other part because sort of it's not interesting or something. But before you got to that part, when you were reading off the slide, I was like, well, one of the things, I have a decent skill set, but one of the instructions that sort of way out of the window and stuff I usually do, and think there are other people out there that are better at some of this sort of relationship building and understanding how to walk people through this sort of thing and so on. I mean, how, Is that sort of not true? But I think this idea that people think that it's not interesting or worthwhile is probably not the case.
They do find it interesting, but they have only a couple of hours a week. And if their course is to do good by learning a bunch of things that they're not already familiar with those same 2 hours a week, or they combine these with the new for 2 hours a week, they strongly prefer the latter. People come to me offering to do the latter, and people come to me very rarely offering to do the former because it takes time, it doesn't have them on the schedule, you kind of put aside 2 hours a week to build somebody's trust.
So is the answer rather that this is the sort of thing that just cannot be done in a couple of hours?
It is the sort of thing that cannot be done in a couple of hours. And it's probably because I tried. I really did. I failed hard. What we were really hoping was that we could get some people to do the outreach from the test building, and then when necessary, we could, you know, we have someone in the corner who could do all the reversing. But it turned out that there was very few reversing that needed to be done. And mostly it was a lot of test building and sort of separating the wheat from the chaff and looking at a pile of emails from somebody going, well, this is malware, but it's not targeted. This is ransomware, but it's not targeted. This is a phishing campaign, but it's not targeted. Oh, this is interesting. So the majority of stuff that comes in is something not that good.
Take the moderator's prerogative and ask you one question finally, which is that you talked about many groups who are schools, groups who are being targeted by these campaigns, and they seem extremely worthy of our support as the security community. But do you think this is getting even more personal than that? I personally do boring on their academic research, but I know there are many people in this room who are doing things that perhaps other nation states would be very interested in learning about before they publish. Have you seen evidence that people within security are starting to be targeted by some of these things? Should we be worried?
Yes and no. On one hand, the security researcher has come to me with a sample from their computer. And this is what the security researcher is coming with paranoid people I have on that. So they're in the probably never even when I was targeted, I was targeted from an activism, not my security researcher. And being that the security researcher was just targeted by my on the other hand, one of the most interesting documents that come out of the survey from us from the beginning was a lot of this maybe I have six hiring documents. I don't know how many people are familiar with that exercise. No? I have six hiring was basically like one long grabbed point by some dude inside the NSA explaining how to break networks specifically by taking system administrators. System administrators have all of the and so you go through LinkedIn, you look to see who the sysadmin is, you figure out where he or she lives, you go to their house, you break their pineapple, you get on their Wi-Fi, you break their VPN, you log in as them, you start uploading your privileges. And the thing is very exciting about this particular method of cracking open networks. We are also very interested in parts of the investigatory powers bill that talks about targeting researchers, which I think is really worrisome. I think that was like section 83 or 84. And my colleague at Amnesty International, Claudia, actually wrote a comment to print on this topic. So, how would that be to talk about security researchers? So, it's possible, but surveillance apparatus is looking at me, specifically at me, but I don't expect it. I believe you're going
to say it. So, if you're inspired up there on the new city that you found, I think it's going to be difficult. And I was just wondering if you ever used the technique that say the UK did in World War II, where they had broken the cipher, but they never ever released what happened on it, unless they could show that they had a plausible story of where they got their intelligence from, so that they would never be. The fact that they had broken the cipher was never released to the enemy, but they and in that report, if an incubator would contact you, you would say, I confirm their device is pwned, rather than clean it, would you just consider leaving it pwned and say, well, I'm not your boss. Occasionally, just act like a good citizen and let them monitor you, but you counter monitor them. Well, if you're your activism on this other point of life, but now we can claim intelligence about who is claiming intelligence on you. Would that be helpful or just quite complicated to do or to do anything like that? And so, how do you like them?
If I use simple technique, I wouldn't do that in the gym.
Okay, thanks. That's a good answer.
If I was really good, I would have to do that again. So, do it again.
I used to advise undergrads for a cell phone, and I had two kinds of staff. One were the CF students, who, when summertime was arriving, were discussing which of their summer positions they would take for sometimes the minimum wage. And then I'd have other students in other areas who are probably much better at the hand-holding type jobs. Having a hard time finding, and they were discussing which of the volunteer positions they would be taking, and whether they would be doing Teach for America for 2 years after college. If you're having a hard time finding the one to make the much lower wage and have the better skills for handholding, maybe you're speaking to the wrong audience. Would it make sense to go to an audience that has more of the latter group?
Yes, but I can only speak to young and simple. So what I do is I say that I talk to people that I'm talking to. But there is sort of an interesting class question that's, kind of out there right now. Because it's clear that there are a lot of people in the same way that shouldn't get involved. They feel sort of intimidated by the person that they have to go and devote hours and hours of their free time to a specific organization that they must come to know about. Because that honestly is draining and intimidating, and may not be what you want to do with your time. What I can tell you is that the large NGOs right now, such as Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, and Privacy International, and probably like on a smaller level, Gold listed several attacks by state actors, specifically on the attacks that we have made public, precisely because we get other NGOs to be comfortable coming out and admitting that they have a problem. An NGO should be like a hardened enterprise, and our NGOs are instead piles of individuals trying desperately to cover their own asses, possibly with very little IT support. A lot of the larger things that NGOs are starting to come out, and they're starting to hire advisors, and they're starting to hire full-time people. Amnesty International, for example, recently hired the co-author on the Operational Law Report, specifically to be a technologist and to have an environment which I think is a very good idea and a much needed role. So these positions are opening up, they're coming, and keep an eye out for them, and hopefully these positions will come not only with extremely important and satisfying work, but the NGOs will also give you the money and the power that you need make the organization into a
hard enterprise. Hi, Trevor Hollinger. So you mentioned trying to work with various organizations and reach out and build trust.
just curious on how that protocol goes. Like, I'm assuming you're not like, searching for contact and all that from random organization websites. And so, what does that process involve?
A lot of my work involves meeting directly with organizations at conferences, specifically conferences related to like certain areas or certain types of work. I also go directly. I have to worry that they are in trouble. It's largely on my work, meaning that I can help them and hopefully they're okay. I try not to make any promises of capabilities that I don't have or time that I don't have. Sometimes I introduce them to other activists. Or technology that could be more helpful. As a good example, I recently talked to a company with a very serious technical problem in which we were being funded by state-sponsored malware. The first language was not English. My first language was Spanish. And so I had to go and find somebody who could do the hand-holding and the computer and nodding and smiling and like email analysis. But who was also fluent in Spanish. Because I knew that if I tried to do it myself, there was a very good chance somewhere along the line I was doing it. Because let me tell you, I think it's maybe more complicated than we're going to talk
about. Since there are no further questions, let us thank Eva Buck for her excellent talk.